This is episode 178 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, Dion Morales, and today I'm joined by Marcel CLTOB Rolls 5 Dice, Range 3, Manzano.
Facts. That's like the highlight of the whole weekend.
Are you going to give us the details now or later? I'm on the edge of my seat.
I mean, if you want it now, I mean, I didn't make the cut, so I'm not going to be in the cup breakdown. I got to roll five dice. So actually, we had to double check with DU and just make sure that it was legal. I was flying Obi-Wan CLT, Plo Koon CLT, and then two Y-Wings with 7th Fleet Gunner. And I ionized them into a gas cloud, so he was ionized, no action, and strained. And then I did a sloop with a bullseye, and I had both Y wings pointing their arcs at that ship that was ionized on a gas cloud, and they both had their 7th Fleet gunner active. So from range 3, I was able to roll my 2 dice, then activate both 7th Fleet gunners on the same attack to get up to 4 dice. And then CLT the focus results to get
for 5. Yeah.
So 5 at range 3 against that was the highlight. Other than that, I lost. I won that game.
You won that one.
I won that game. Lost the other one. But yeah. I'll take that as a win, cuz I didn't even know that was possible until, cuz I was thinking, you know, just like swap off some Fleet gunners, you know, as they came up.
Right.
But at that one, I was like, the last turn of the game, I was like, can I use both at the same time right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, well, here's an opportunity for a PSA, because you got to remember, 7th Fleet Gunner has the notice about not being able to roll more than 4 dice. We got to remember that the Jedi adding a focus result is not really a dice. It's just a focus result. So That's why you're able to get 5. That's awesome. We're also joined by Will, new hero of the Empire, Hagwood.
Mahler? Good? Question mark.
And Ryan, the lore master declares post-game dice results are the worst part of online X-Wing, Stanazuski.
Stop sending me screenshots of your luck scores. I don't want to see it until you talk to me about the rest of the game.
There you go.
Quit being blinded by the numbers and talk about your movement.
No, X-Wing is a game of math. Well, let's get into our announcements and news real quick. If you were on our Discord, you saw me post a couple of graphics in the announcements channel, and I'll show you the latest one I put up there. So we've been talking about it, the Gold Squadron Flight Club Championship. We're going to be announcing all of the details coming up during Coruscant. That's when we'll release it. Hopefully everything will be done. That's the deadline I've given myself, and I will tell you, today's podcast is going to be a little bit shorter because I got some Flight Club Championship stuff to work on. I will give you some spoilers, though, with this graphic. Those symbols that you see there with the faction symbols, those are actually the base designs for pins for faction prizes for the top 8 of each qualifying event. So you can play some Pokemon with yourself and try to catch them all. We'll see what happens. But that's super excited to announce, because there is a lot. It is a very in-depth process, this Flight Club. It's probably more extreme than I have to take it, but I'm excited to do some crazy stuff. But before we go too far, I want to remind you, we stream every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday here on Gold Squadron on Twitch. Hopefully you guys can join us. And those of you who are joining us live right now, thank you for being part of the conversation. So let's jump into it. Today, we're going to talk about the results of Mustafar. If you were living under a rock, okay, and you're an X-Wing fan, last Saturday and Sunday, we had the Mustafar Galactic Championship qualifier. It was a hyperspace event. So when we're talking about these lists, make sure that you're having that in mind, because it's important, because you might be like, well, why is this upgrade not here and not there? that's the reason probably why, to answer some of your questions, we don't have some upgrades because it's hyperspace. Well, let's get it started right here. Will, you'll go first, starting with Stephen Ware at 32.
All right, Stephen Ware is flying a Separatist Alliance list that has four HMP gunships. They're all Bactroid drones. Of course, the probe droids on one of them. Looks like they're all rocking repulsor lifts. So let's see, we have Diamond Boron on the probe droid, concussion missiles with a Discord missile, concussion missiles with Discord and concussion bombs, and delayed fuses. Always a nice combo between the concussion and delayed. Then concussion missiles and the tactical relay Kraken as well. So you get to Kraken to hold the calculates for Discords, plus you have probe droids to get locks early for your munitions. Just a bunch of dice modifiers. I like the little twist of the Discord missiles in there as well.
You know, so this is another event. So last week we were talking about Ryloth and the results for that. Another appearance of four HMP gunships. I mean, we haven't seen them too successful in a Separatist salad. Is it the unique movement of those repulsor stabilizers keeping them together that makes them more competitive in a group of four of the same ships? What do you think?
I think it's the combination that they do not spend their locks. So there's always four locks normally floating around the map, providing every single one of these a reroll, at least onto that ship. In addition to that, I do agree 100%. We've seen Phantoms and Star Vipers, and now these HMP gunships. When you have those unique sideways moving, it's so much easier just to fly in that block and not have to worry about any other ships in your squadron. So I definitely fully agree.
All right, let's continue here. Ryan?
All right, next up we have Alex Mogensen running a two fire spray list. One of them obviously Boba Fett with Maul, concussion bombs, contraband cybernetics, hull upgrade, and Slave One. Then we have Koshka Frost with 000, concussion bombs, rig cargo chute, and hull upgrade. Even 200 points, took all the toys.
I mean, it's a pretty, Boba Fett, pretty known commodity. I mean, let's be honest, hyperspace king, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, and Koshka Frost is just the flavor of choice in this with a pair up. Trust me, Boba Fett comes back. Boba Fett comes back.
He never left.
No, he did not. Next, we have Jorge Castaneda.
Are you saying me or is that
yeah?
You?
That was like a gentle transition.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm glad you at least get the Hispanic name rights. I mean names right. that's good. So it's a pretty straightforward Rebel Alliance list. It's five X-wings with nothing other than S-foils and Blue Squadron escorts, the T-65 Initiative 2. Kind of just some beef, throwing some of that old Rebel one straight to victory beef out.
Yeah, I mean it is that simple, beef. Right? It's going to come down to making sure that you keep your arc on target as long as possible is what I'm guessing, right? And trying to leverage the five ships that you have with three attack dice as much as possible. Now, what initiative are those guys? The Blue Squadrons?
Two.
Two? Okay.
Yeah, because you can also get the initiative ones, but then you have to... You're trading that off for an illicit, but you don't have the points to get five with an illicit.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's keep on rolling here. Joe Cogden brought a resistance list. It is one of my favorite archetypes, the five A-wings. It's an archetype... I see you shaking your head. it's a great archetype. We know that it's really, really good. Joe, his flavor today was the Blue Squadron recruit, Ronith, Greer, ZZ, and Tally. All of them have heroic and optics except for Tally, who only has heroic and sitting at 200 points. Now, I'm curious. One of the things we can't ignore with Coruscant coming around the corner, which we're going to talk about this in a little bit, there are some new A-Wings coming around the corner. Next weekend, we're going to have the release of the Heralds of Hope, which has some new A-Wing pilots in there, depending on the points. We might see a resurgence in the 5 A-Wing archetype if there is a good A-Wing in there that has really great value. So we'll end up seeing there, of course. That is barring any other point changes that may happen, and that's something that we'll hit on here in a little bit. Let's continue. We'll take the next one. Daryl Stidley, or Stidley.
He is rocking the Rebel Alliance. He's got Han Solo in the Falcon, the YT-1300, with Kanan Jarrus' crew, giving him that force point. He's got two Y-Wings, Dutch, with Ion Cannon. They both have the same loadout, so it's Dutch and Nora, with Ion Cannon turret, advanced proton torpedoes, and those concussion bombs with delayed fuses. Very interesting. Y-Wings really made a resurgence, I think. The concussion bombs bringing them back into more competitive play.
It's a cheaper platform to bring them, right? Like, it's... Yeah. And, of course,
And there's nothing wrong with Nora and Dutch. Like, they're... Like, Dutch's ability is very good to help Nora. Nora's real tanky. Like, it's interesting. I would not have expected this at all.
And... You know, it was one of you three said it before we got on. A lot of people in hyperspace, we tend to have a lot of jousting squads. Because I think if you had a high prevalence of aces, I'm not sure this list works as well. Because I'm not sure how often you actually get those advanced proton torpedoes off. Because if aces are just moving around, keeping range, you're probably not doing much. With those advanced proton torpedoes. Of course, they also do have the ion cannon to give some threat at range, too. It's just a thought that came to my mind. But this is not the only instance of this slim Han Solo that's going to come up, or of Nora Wexley.
No, and it is an interesting pair, because if you're trying to bomb, you're trying to use those side arcs, use those ion cannon turrets, right, to... you don't want to head straight at somebody, because they won't be in your bounds then. Mm-hmm. So having Han Solo being able to, you know, just be a bunch of turrets. Very interesting.
All right. Next, Marcus Squires brought another Boba Fett Koska Frost list. Is this one any different than the last one that we read?
Yeah, Koska in this one does not have rig cargo chute, and Boba opted for proton bombs, and Koska opted for seismic charges. Both of them before had concussion bombs.
There you go.
And 2-point bit.
So a little bit of a different loadout there from Mark Squires, but another Boba Fett and Koska Frost. Ryan, go ahead, take this next one from Bryant Francis.
Bryant running a Galactic Republic list, a Warthog with Fives, Ghost Company, and Hull Upgrade. Three Blue Squadron Protector V-19 Torrents, all with Dedicated, and Obi-Wan with CLT.
So looking at the squad, I mean, is this just a... Obi-Wan in this squad, I find it very, very interesting, because obviously it doesn't work with the Warthog ability. I mean, any thoughts on that, Brian?
He really works well when he's got three other ships dedicated, allowing him to reroll his defensive dice. And when those dedicated ships don't die until the end phase, they at least still get to shoot. So it's actually pretty good at protecting Obi and giving him very good quality CLT shots with the rerolls from Warthog. Fives is a solid, cheap crew. Ghost Company allows the Warthog to shoot twice. It's a Bistan-type upgrade. And the Hull upgrade keeps Warthog alive longer. Warthog is the most expensive ship in that list.
Mm-hmm. You got to burn it down. It makes it all tick here. Marcel takes Jared Britton.
So he's got Hollow with Proud Tradition and three Tie Silencers coming in at 199. It's pretty straightforward list. It's Hollow plus either usually a bunch of SFs, FOs, or in this case, silencers. Solid enough. I think the only interesting thing is that, you know, whether you're using Hollow or Malrus, but I think that's basically it, right? You're either flying Malrus with silencers or Hollow with silencers. But pretty solid. We know three agility ships, especially with three attack dice, are tough to kill regardless what initiative they are, especially when crack shot's not around.
Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about for the first order, now this is the first instance we've got to it so far, there was a ton of first order in this tournament. It was the highest percentage faction out of any of them. We'll get to Empire in a little bit, but I'm assuming that all the Empire players, or most of them, went to the first order because the numbers are pretty ridiculous. When you just look at what you're used to thinking and expecting for Extended, this is completely different. We're in a completely different world. All right, take the next one as well, Marcel.
Sure. All right, we got Connor Holmes flying a Boba Eamon list. Boba has Darth Maul, Proton Bombs, Hull Upgrade, and Slave 1. And then Eamon Azemin has Seismic Charges, Concussion Bombs, Delayed Fuses, and Andraste coming in at 194. It's similar to the Boba Koshka list. Instead of that, this one is relying more on bombs versus distress and the other abilities that Koshka brings. If anything, I just a little surprised of the two seismic and concussion versus maybe trying to squeeze in a seismic charge, but I assume trying to squeeze in a proximity mine, since Eamon is really good at landing those.
You mean cluster mine?
Oh, proximity's not a
not hyperspace legal.
And cluster mines just plain suck. That's why he did it. Well, I guess he could have gone proton also, concussion proton. But yeah, I mean, I get it. The seismic's got wider range because they hit the rocks and stuff. So, all right, I stand corrected.
All right. Now, at the end, try to remind me, we're going to find some other variations of Boba Fett plus something else. I just want to talk about those pairings, the decision-making process and deciding what you want to bring with Boba Fett. Because really, what these are when they come up, it's a Boba Fett list with something else. We'll continue. So, Richard Wiley brought a Rebel list with Leia, Nora Wexley in the Y-Wing. By the way, sorry, Leia has Agile Gunner. That's at the end of the end phase. You can turn your turret, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, so you don't have to use your action. Nora Wexley in the Y-Wing, Dorsal Turret, Delayed Fuses, Concussion Bombs, and then Jaqen Arvel in the RZ-1 A-Wing with no upgrades at 199 points. We didn't get to see this one on stream. I do find it really interesting seeing two RZ-1A wings. Usually we see a lot of Jake. Arvel has kind of fallen a little bit to the wayside, but another appearance of Nora in this list, carrying those concussion bombs. They're coming up again. I mean, they are definitely the most popular bomb by far out there, and just doing her thing. She's got the delayed fuses to help to mitigate and manage some of the concussion bomb force drops, and the dorsal turret to help extend the arc. Next, friend of the show, Tommy Adams. Take it, Will.
All right, he's got Galactic Republic. This is his famed list he flew in Ryloth with a small variation to make it hyperspace legal. It includes Baby Annie with passive sensors, proton torpedoes, Wolf in the ARC 170 with R4P. That's the two charges. Basic maneuver is decreased in difficulty. There's Barriss Ophi, the one force point I-4 with calibrated laser targeting on the Aether Sprite. Then Plo Koon, also in the Aether Sprite with the calibrated laser targeting. I'd pick, personally, nothing against it, Tommy. You got odd picks in Jedi. I'll say that much. not the two Jedi most people would choose. But yeah, like I said, he did well in Marloth. I think he had Cody on his arc. But yeah, knows the Anakin well. Knows the arc platform well. And apparently knows these Jedi very well. And to make cut in two different events with it. Very nice job.
All right. Yeah, but Barriss and Plo combination, not something you see very often. Tommy Adams special there. Love it. Love it. Tommy always got something a little different. All right, take it, Ryan.
All right, next we got Eric Nee with our first order, first sighting up this rankings of what is now being dubbed, I believe, Malware, which is Commander Malrus with Agent Terex and six TIEFO fighters of the Cadet variant. 1 point bid, nothing else really to do with that. Solid jousting swarm. Your bubble of that reroll is 0-2, so they do not have to stay in a block. I didn't get to see any of these games over the weekend. I'd be curious to know, of these lists that were successful, were they more successful staying in a block, two groups of three flanking either side of Malrus, or just a nice spread?
Yep, and for anybody else...
So what did you see, Will or Dion?
So
when I played one, Malrus was behind the swarm, but I kind of positioned in a jousting way. So they were trying to get all the guns on target.
Were the six all just in a block?
Yeah, they're coming in a block.
Okay.
Yep. Moving down their deployment, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but for anybody who doesn't remember here, Malrus is the TIE, the shuttle that says when you're attacking, if you roll a blank result and you're within that range 0-2 bubble, you must take a strain to reroll. Is it up to two of the blank results, or is it just one?
No, it's just one. Because it's your modification order, if you have a lock, you can choose to spend the lock and not have to deal with the must strain reroll of Malrus.
That's true. So impeccably flawed, said Eric was my first game, and he kept them in a block with Malrus behind. All right, that sounds consistent with what Will saw. Fantastic. Marcel? Take Dom Flanagan.
All right. Dom flew a separatist list with Techno Union Bomber with the plasma torpedoes, landing struts. Well, two of those. And then he had another Techno Bomber with Mad Pulse Warheads and Probe Droids. Then 1, 2, 3 Trade Federation drones with Discord missiles. Ooh. Blah, 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 stuttering. And grappling struts with one naked Trade Federation drone. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So it's kind of a little bit of a variant of the list that's been popular with two plasmas, three discords, and two Trade Federation drones. Kind of switched it up a bit so he can get some landing struts in there, and then he can also get the Mag Pulse Warhead in there, which I think it's an interesting one, being, you know, Mag Pulse Warheads at initiative one. I think it's kind of
choice. My only guess on this is that none of these ships have shields, so concussions could go pretty badly.
Mm-hmm.
Mag Pulse is the same price, shoots the same three dice.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense.
Yeah, and if you start off with it, and it's going against a ship that maybe rolled dice that didn't need to use their focus, well, now it's going to be jammed if they get a hit. So it's a good starting shot. Even the plasma torpedoes, theoretically, you'd want to start with first. You have the option.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. It does. It creates a situation where it's like, all right, I could spend this token or be jammed. What's the call? Kind of you're gonna lose a token most likely either way unless you roll the natties. Very cool.
Yeah, it's just still interesting. Initiative one interesting, but cool. Also forces them to do a blue, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because of the deplete, you might save yourself next round if they have to K turn. Mm-hmm.
Next, we have Nicholas Durand with another First Order list, another variant. Lots of variants in First Order. Hollow, basically the queen of the First Order, with Proud Tradition, with TN3465, lovingly known as Tina, with Automated Target Priority, and then three Zeta Squadron Survivors. Those are the Initiative 2. Thank you, Ryan. Initiative 2 TIE SFs. In the squad, two of them had Special Forces Gunner to get up to that three dice attack, and one of them with the automated target priority at 199 points. You know that I will tell you, me as a player, I have a hard time flying the same like asymmetrical ships. That's what I'm trying to say. I have a hard time doing this. I'd be really interested to find out how Nicholas prioritized these Zetas. Because obviously he paid the points for the special forces.
Yeah, I played against them. I played against them round two. That was like this highly variance game. He actually killed Plo with two range three shots unmodded, and Plo just disappeared. The way that he played it, he started off kind of the same way as you would expect with kind of Hollow in the back and the four of them coming forward. But what he ended up doing is he ended up taking the two that were Special Forces Gunner, mm-hmm. and he actually broke them off into their own. He broke them off into like their own little mini squad. So they were covering, because I came in, I was trying to do like a pincer move, and he took them just the way to do their own thing, and he kept Hollow with the cheaper one. So he kept Hollow with TN and Zeta. That has no Special Forces Gunner, and the two other Special Forces Gunner just kind of went out and did their own thing separate. So anyway, that's the way he approached my game. I don't know how he did the rest of the games, but he did fly them kind of. He didn't fly them just as a big jouster. He had them spread out.
Cool. I mean, he basically had two groups is what it sounds like, right? Two groups. Being able to possibly set up some of those range one shots with the Special Forces Gunner. I like that. That seems great. Very cool, Nicholas. Thank you. Next, we had Damian Huauda. Take it, Will.
Right. He has a Galactic Republic list with Warthog. And Diamond Boron Missiles, Wolfpack, Synchronized Consoled, and three ARC 170s, the 7th Fleet Veterans with Synchronized Consoled. So Wolfpack, if I am paraphrasing it correctly, if a friendly is shot in the Lats ARC, the defender can take a strain to acquire a lock. And that sets up the synchronized console chain to where the more people who are shot at, the more target locks you have and can pass around. The 7th Fleet Veterans are initiative 3, so you even get to choose your firing order as well to being able to pass off that lock from, say, like an obstructed range 3. You can sling it all the way in, over to Warthog so you can fire off those Diamond Boron missiles. Marcel was trying out something very similar with munitions. This is just replacing it with just a bunch of health and native three dice attacks.
I like it. And a little tricksiness there. The Warthog ability, the Lat ship ability, Fire Convergence, does work on Warthog's own Diamond Boron missile, assuming that it's also in that arc.
Yeah, between the Synchronized Consoled, Wolfpack, and Lat ability, I imagine that you could get rerolls on every single shot almost every round.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds brutal.
Next up, Sean Oakley bringing the dreaded Nantex. Six Nantex, Petronaki Aces with dead eye shot and marksmanship. Six of them at 192 points. This is the hyperspace version of it because there's no crack shot, so we took dead eye shot instead. And marksmanship obviously did well enough to get into the top cut, but not to get the W. We'll continue on here. Take it, Ryan. Nick Burke, what did he bring?
Nick Burke bringing his version of triple silencers. The same pilots across the board as we've seen in the past with Kylo, Blackout, St. R. Jameis Engineer. Slight shift on upgrades. We have Blackout taking the advanced optics this time instead of the St. R. Jameis Engineer. And then the Engineer decides to stick with the new 1-point upgrade automated target. Priority going with a full 8-point bid.
What automated target priority on an I-1 silencer? Why? I'm just curious. He's not the only person who's doing it. I don't know. There is a cost there. I know that you can have the ability to get the calculate, but it can set up some opportunities where you're forced to shoot a target you might not necessarily want to.
I think it's the
The most interesting part is putting it on a ship that has three attack dice, because a three attack dice ship, it's threatening enough to even like towards the end of the game, or, you know, be able to threaten someone at range two or three, where a two attack dice ship, you're probably taking the best shot you have anyway. Mm-hmm. So I, for me, that's the interesting choice. The putting it on a three attack dice ship versus putting it on a two attack dice ship.
Yeah, I'll still say I like Cody Wood's version where he puts Fanatical on Blackout and puts Advanced Optics on the St. R. Jameis Engineer, because a lot of times the I-1 ends up getting the finishing kills in a lot of lists because everything else has spent their tokens on all the higher initiative shots, and making Advanced Optics giving you the flexible chance of turning blanks over if you maintain the focus at the end is a good additional punch towards the end of the round at I-1 versus automated target priority, which, while potentially gives you that calculate for the next turn if you miss, I don't know how often you want automated target priority on a ship within a three-ship list, especially when you need that flexibility to shoot who you want and target who you need, since you're most likely in a points battle, not a full destruction battle with the silencers.
That's true.
Yeah, I find it interesting. I've had more success with automated targeting priority on initiative threes because the I-1s, granted, he's got a big enough bid against other I-1s that he could be first player, I guess. But the problem with it on I-1s is that you rarely get to use it for defense. But it does allow you to use a regular focus then on defense and then have to calculate for offensive. I just think it's more valuable if you have a chance to use it on defense as well.
All right. So that is Nick Burke. We'll move on here. Jan Hedrick Tillman bringing not six Nantex, but five Nantex with Deadeye Shot and Marksmanship. And in place of the six Nantex, we got a Bactoid prototype Hyena class droid bomber with passive sensors, diamond boron missiles, and landing struts. Obviously, again, did really, really well with this variant of the archetype sitting at 197 points. We'll continue on here to Mike Maui Thompson. I think it's Ryan.
Oh, no.
I did the silencers. I think it's Marcel.
It just circled back to Marcel.
All right. So here we go. Another 5A wing list. It's ZZ, Tally, Greer, Ronathan Blue. And it's actually the exact same list as before. They all have heroic and advanced optics, with Tally only having heroic. So no difference at all in this particular list. And I wonder how many people opted to go Tally with heroic instead of another Blue Squadron heroic advanced, which are the same points, because of fear of Nantex.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably where I'm thinking, where traditionally you would have a 1-1-2-4-5 list with Tally. I think you get more value out of a blue squadron with heroic and events optics than Tally. But again, I think it was just kind of the fear of the I-4 that kind of put people in this basket. But that's the second 5A wing list.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Go ahead, take the next one as well.
All right, next one you got Dale Cromwell, also known as the Jousting Ace. He flew a Major Von Reg with Daredevil, Kylo Ren with advanced optics, and then Rush with automated target priority. Another lower initiative ship that has that, but then he has the potential of also being a high initiative ship with that. So I can see a little bit more there for that one. Coming in at 195 points. And I got to see the match that he lost where I just remember turning on the stream and then seeing like, hey, wait, why is he jousting five ships? It was like, no, he just like went straight at five ships. It worked. It worked well enough for him to make it this far. So, you know, you can't argue with, you know, some level of success.
Yeah, you know, I will say Dale played a game where it's when we were in Poland. He played a game the day that I played. I believe Andrew and D commentated on it. It's in our archives where he jousted with the aces. So I mean, he's basically Leroy Jenkins. Okay, he is the Leroy Jenkins of X-Wing for sure, and also a super wholesome guy. So congrats, Dale, getting as far as you did in the Mustafar Galactic Championship. We'll continue here. David Nyrick bringing four Sinar Jameis Engineers. We've always said, hey, four silencers are really good. You can fill them on a list. Some people opt for the higher initiative and make it down to three with some fancy toys in there. Dave says, just give me four ships that move real fast, and was obviously able to do really, really well with that. Next, we have Richard Hines with another Boba Fett and Koshka Frost. Very similar to the ones we saw there. A little bit of variation on the bombs. We have Maul, Concussion, Contraband, Hull Upgrade, Slave 1. That's all on Boba Fett. And then Koshka with 000 Concussion Bombs and Hull Upgrades. Also, a Chicago area native. How's it going, Rich? Let's continue here with Nathan Jackson. Take it, Will.
All right. He brought a first order list of three Zeta Squadron Survivors, which is a generic I-2 SFs. They all have concussion missiles, utilizing the SF's ability to shoot those missiles out their rear arc. And then Kylo Ren with advanced optics at 194. This is very surprising to me as well. I do believe in the rear arc concussion missiles. But I would imagine this list would have passive sensors in it. But Nathan Jackson needs that Kylo to have a bid to finish games,
mm-hmm.
I can imagine.
Absolutely. And optics on Kylo is something we saw a couple times this weekend. I mean, you have the Force.
I don't like it. Take target locks.
Really? You don't like it?
No, take target locks.
But
I would rather have the ability to always be able to modify my dice than only be able to modify one.
I mean, you modify one blank and then have Force.
Well, if you roll two blanks.
Sucks to suck.
Roll yeah, better.
I know. Would it be nice if you could just re-roll both of them? This is just my opinion.
Look, I do agree once he gets to range one, he better be taking target locks. But any of those range two or three shots, advanced optics plus force should get done. So if you're not being shot, you don't have to worry about spending the focus or force defensively.
No. No. I'm only taking focuses if I plan on spending it for defense.
So here's my question.
It's just not my philosophy.
So here's my question. So are you saying you would rather take those points, because you could just take a target lock, would you rather take those points and put them somewhere else?
No, I'd rather have like an ion missile or a bid, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if you drop advanced optics, you could put passive sensors on all those SFs, but you only have a 1 point bid.
What? Passive sensors is only two points, I thought.
Oh, that's right. It is only two. I keep thinking it's like always three. But yeah, no, it's 2 points on those guys, so you still have a solid bid.
So a 4 point bid? Yes, I'd rather do that. But I'm not Nathan Jackson, though. And I can't fault advanced optics. Like, target locking does, you know, you have to find it. It's harder to lock and then boost. So, like, it has its own problems. I can see with that. But, I mean, obviously, I think the last Kylo as well had optics. It has been the upgrade of choice on him. Uh-huh. So I can't fault anybody for that.
So Will's not saying you're wrong, Nathan Jackson. He's just saying I don't agree with you.
I just like the lock action.
He likes the lock action. All right, Ryan, take a look at this one.
What am I looking at here?
This is a Chicago, Chicago area local here.
Kent Whitney, First Order list. This is not what I expected to see out of First Order. We have not one, but two Zai shuttles in a single list, each of the named favorites, one being Maurus and one being Gideon Hask. So you have the take strain to reroll blank, must, or you have the if damaged, take strain to roll another die after you've already rolled the first two. And then you have two Zeta Squadron SFs, Tina, and a cadet. So it worked to some degree. I never thought I would ever need to think about two Zai shells. I still don't know if I ever will, but there's some combination there, and that's if one ship's taking two strain to make the attack hurt enough, sure, go for it.
So I'll talk a little bit about this one, because like Dion said, this is a local guy. He lives down the street from me. And he also knocked me out of having a three-peat at the Gold Squadron League Championships in the final with this specific list. So actually what he ends up doing, and at least what he did with me, is he ends up using both of those shuttles as a coordinator. So his lower initiative ships are always, he's always got two of them with double mods. So he's chucking a lot of dice. He's very modded dice. And then, of course, with TN, he's getting the crits in there. So it works. I mean, it worked for him. He was flying it across League, and he ended up winning League with it. And obviously, he did well here as well. So those little guys, it takes a while to chew through the two shuttles, especially if they're behind the rest of the crew, and the rest of the crew punches really hard because they're usually punching with a lot of mods.
I had the chance to play Kent, and if you ignore those SFs, I think one of his SF got up to like 6 or 7 strain because I just wasn't shooting at it, and it was taking that third die and the reroll every single attack.
I would have expected the SFs would be the primary target.
No, I wasn't taking down the shuttles. I'm busy.
But the shuttles probably don't hit you as hard as the SFs in the long game with the front and back arc.
Yeah, but they're easier to find on the board.
Also worth more
That's
points.
That's true.
And they're worth a lot more
points. Yeah, they are worth more points. If I looked at that list across the table, I'd probably zone in on the SFs and get
Trust
those
me,
off.
It is, as these two can attest, or at least Marcel, that it is not easy to find those shuttles. There is a wall of TIE fighters in front of them.
Okay. If you are a Twitch subscriber, or you can be patient enough to wait for the videos to come out on YouTube, watch Kent's game against Daniel Leon. It was a round 6 of Swiss. You got to see the, you know, every swing, every list has an upside, right? The highest potential versus the lowest potential. We got to see that extreme of the worst case scenarios for Daniel Leon versus this list. Kent's list was throwing fire, like literally 3 hits every single time, adding the Gideon in there, or 2 if it was the initial shot, getting the damage in. I mean, it was ridiculous, and you got to just see ships just exploding and mowing down. If you watched and you're watching live now, let me know. It was a massacre. It was an absolute massacre. And it made you look at Kent's squad and go, oh, that is scary. That is really scary. When you see a combo work as effective as it did in that game, it was cool, but also hard to watch at the same time, because it was scary. Let's put it that way. It was scary. We'll continue on here. Another first order squad here. We got David Meyer with Commander Malrus again, this time with Agent Terex, and that is 6 Epsilon Squadron Cadet TIE FOs. Again, just using that reroll on the blank in order to try to make the Typho attacks more consistent. Next, let's talk about Will's nemesis, Jace Hugo.
I think I was his nemesis. I was his Gary for this tournament, that's for sure.
All right, Marcel, take it.
All right, we got Jace Hugo?
Sure.
Jace Hugo. Flying the 3-4 Jedi Aether Sprites with calibrated the broadside with Ion Turret. Pretty straightforward list. Just because it's a straightforward list doesn't mean you have to straightforward joust it, Dale. but yeah, I mean, not a lot to say other than it's a super solid list. And that broadside is extremely effective. I'm assuming what they just throw a couple target lots on broadside turn one and let broadside go to town.
No.
You're thinking of matchstick.
You're thinking of matchstick.
That's matchstick. So broadside is the one that changes
focus. Yeah, blank to focus.
The blank to an eyeball.
Blank to focus. Okay.
Well, here let's.
And that's good as well.
Let's default to Will on this, as he got to play against Jace not once but twice, and was able to overcome the curse of the Swiss.
Yeah, we got a stream game that went well for me at first, but he was. My head was not in it. He was doing crazy things, sleeping all over, and I was getting outflown. You just couldn't land meaningful shots. Merrick kept dodging. Merrick just would not die during that game. That gave him 2 losses. Tried to get him out of the tournament, but with I believe it was a drop. Someone couldn't make the top cut. So Jace crawls his way back in, because we're up in like what, the top 8 right now?
Yeah,
top 16.
I think we're at the top 8. Yep.
Jace crawls his way back all the way to the top 8, then has to rematch me. And it was we definitely both learned from our mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a fairly quick game. Chips were getting blasted left and right. Between the CLTs and the 4 dice for my ships at range 1, not a lot was surviving.
Yeah, I got to talk about the first game. I got to talk about the first game because I think it was a combination of Jace choosing just like the right moves in that last 20 minutes and you overthinking just a little bit as well.
Time I was just like, I got lost in it. I was like, well, okay, you can 1 bank boost barrel roll. You could 3 bank barrel roll. Like, I just kept getting lost in his double repositions. I was like, well, you could block me here. You could block me that way. Or I could just K-turn and catch me that way. Like, I really couldn't predict him at all. To be honest with you, it was throwing me off.
I think Jace is in the chat right now. How's it going, Jace? Great play. It was really cool to see this squad do so well. Having some variation in the Republic. We've been seeing a lot of Warthog plus other stuff making cuts since the lat release, and this is just a different variation, and Jace did fly it really, really well. And obviously, even though he was able to slide in to the top cut, well deserved, getting all the way to the top 8.
No, excellently flown.
All right, Ryan, did I accidentally skip you?
No, I did the crazy Kent Whitney list.
Ah, yes. Okay. So, Scott Olavesson, a.k.a. Deslin, bringing another variation of a Malrus list. Malrus with proud tradition. That's so getting the focus on the stop, essentially, is what that is, right? And on the hard ones with Kylo Ren and three Epsilon Squadron cadets. Those are the TIE FOs. I mean, same idea here, but I feel like Scott is taking the best of the, like, all right, Kylo is the best ace in the triple ace archetype that the First Order has been going around. Malrus with a swarm is great, but instead we're not going to do a full swarm. It's essentially ace mini swarm is what the archetype that is being rolled here, and Scott did really, really well. I do like, this archetype. I think I might try to fly this for League Night, because you get the ace play and the swarm. I like it. I think we actually had Scott on stream as well, so go ahead and take a look at that. All right, I don't know who's next. Matt Carey, take it. Is it Will?
I think it circled back around to me. I'm losing track. Matt Carey, another Han Solo with Kanan Jarrus. This one taking Jake Farrell in the A-Wing and Alexander Callis in the VCX-100. That's the Ghost with passive sensors. So it's kind of a play on what Ketch has been flying for a long time. The Han Solo Wedge Jake. Mixing it up here for hyperspace by bringing in someone who hits just as hard as Wedge, Alexander Callis. So you get Jake can give him a focus. They're both I-4, so Callis can move up. Then Jake can boost into range of him. Then takes passive sensors. Just a blast, whatever happened to be in his arc. And Han Solo just doing Han Solo things, hanging out with the Force.
Yeah, to see this is the second instance, I think, of the slim Han Solo just with Kanan, basically being able to manipulate the dial. That's always good. We know that being able to, obviously you can't change your maneuver, but being able to manipulate the difficulties using Kanan, relieving stress after a K-turn or a sloop, if that's what you did, I mean, just options are great. Is Callis more survivable than Wedge? Does the math check out on that? I mean, it feels that way, but I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know if that's the truth.
If your opponent is modifying dice, yes. Callis's 14 health on one agility is a lot better than 6 health on 2 agility.
Oh, yes. Callis is the VCX that says if the enemy ship firing at it modifies its dice, you do get an agility. So you could be a little bit more survivable there. Okay. Yeah.
It's more survivable, but less time on target.
True.
Right. You're not flying fancy. You're a big old gun just toting around.
you're flying not Hera, essentially.
It's what fits. With Jake flying around out there, like I said, the same initiative, so Callis can move up, Jake can then boost, and the next round, Jake could, say, hard one, barrel roll, boost, and Callis could then K-turn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting.
Oh, I will quickly went to the Dice Calculator website and checked the durability tab, and there wasn't a spot to input a good way for Callis's ability, but just including a base VCX, it takes an average of about 6.5 3 die focus attacks to bring down a VCX. For Wedge, against the same thing, he's about at 4.
Okay, so the answer is yes.
And if Callus's ability kicks in, that's even much more.
All right. Very, very cool. Yeah, so Matt Carey identifying a way to stretch that archetype just a little bit more. Ryan, go ahead and take Connor Prince.
Connor Prince running the ever-favorite version of the red and black pointy things, which has pretty much been keyed in on as Holo with Proud Tradition and 3 silencers. I might go as far as to say this might be, I'd have to look at the numbers, but just looking at how it's performed both in Mustafar and over the past events, the best First Order list until we're proven with more time with the Z Shuttle.
I agree. It's definitely up there. It's been very competitive, mm-hmm. and we've seen it for the last few events. It's been popping up here and there. It is there, 100%. All right, Will, we're going to slide back to you because we've gotten to you, top four, William Haygood.
I want to hear Marcel's opinion on it, actually.
Marcel's giggling. All right, Marcel, what did Will bring?
Straight garbage, I guess he... this is the definition of like batting above your average or whatever the phrase is, but aiming above your station. Yeah, he flew Darth Vader with fire control system, Marik Steele with fire control system, Major Vermeil. Actually, let's jump to Order Mahler because he's still in the initiative five with Deadeye Shot. And then Vermeil with Intimidation coming in at 200 points. He doesn't even need a bid. That's how good William is. So I actually do have a couple opinions about this. One of them is, folks, don't try this at home. That's the first one I'd say. Don't try this at home. Just because it works for Will doesn't mean it'll work for everyone. You know, Will's an amazing pilot. We already know that. He's got all them championship belts in the back. They're hiding somewhere behind those boards for a reason.
He's packing. He's moving. He'll be...
Yeah. But actually, outside of that, Will did set me up with... minus Vermeil with versions of this during our team championship run.
You had it with Duchess in the Bathroom Team Tournament.
And it actually works. Like, I flew the Marik Steele, Darth Vader, Mahler, and then Duchess. Yeah, we had Duchess instead of Vermeil. So it actually works because I won both of those games. And I was telling Will, like, Will, what did you do? You're like, you set me up for failure with this hot garbage. And then you play it and it's like, well, it's actually not garbage. It's actually pretty good. So I would say it's one of those that feels wrong. But then when you're actually playing it, it's like... Yeah, this works. This makes sense.
I feel like this is more of a testament to Will's abilities and not a testament to the list.
Okay, all right.
I will say this list
building ability. Then
this list screams Dale Cromwell, though. Like, just
we're in the same imperial kind of mindset of, you know, a dead ship is technically an arc dodged.
That's right. I can dodge you if you're dead. Now, Will, the chat has required me to apologize. So I'm going to give an apology
to me?
To you, yes. Because literally, okay. I think it was the game before your first game on stream, we were talking about how few Imperials there were, and I said, yeah, basically there's no Vader in hyperspace because you don't have afterburners, right? And then, of course, hey, Will's playing Vader. Well, Will's playing Vader without afterburners. Hopefully this goes well. It goes really well. And people are just slowly, Dion, does Vader need afterburners? Afterburners, ? At Gold Squadron, afterburners. So here's my apology. Obviously, you made it work. But I am going to still say, I'm going to agree with both Ryan and Marcel and say that I would still be nervous to not have afterburners on Vader, because I will say in the first game there were two turns that if you had afterburners you would have won the game earlier, but obviously you didn't have the tool available. It wasn't there. So great job flying. I also agree you probably shouldn't, unless you've got the practice, not having afterburners on Vader is risky business. Go cautiously into the wind.
Even with the practice, don't do it.
Look, all right, so there's two questions I have for Will on the list building process.
Okay, sure.
One.
What? Is it just Y?
No, it's not just, well, there's two Ys, but okay. they're more words than just Y.
Why do you punish yourself is what I assumed it was.
So did you coordinate Merrick often with Vermeil on the way in? Or was Vermeil running headlong to get in the mix to just bunch things up and deal with intimidation?
Yes, I did coordinate him. That is definitely one of the tools in the toolbox that Vermeil brings. It really depends on, so with the facing the foe list, right? The Malorus and foes, I can't do that with Vermeil. I can't just send him headlong and jam a 25-point ship. Like, nope, not gonna happen. So in those matchups, that's when Vermeil's taking a back seat and he's just kind of one banking and coordinating, one bank coordinate. And that way it keeps him out of the initial joust, and I can give I really like giving Merrick focus bear roll, and then he one banks and target locks.
Sure.
That's super good.
Super natural on I-4.
Pretty much. Merrick's I-5, but the bear roll is at I-4.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like the coordinate for the mm-hmm. seemingly supernatural style effect happens at I-4.
Yeah. Yeah, so I get to see where any generic goes and then be able to still coordinate my aces on that. So I did use it, but if Vermeil saw an opening where he's like, I won't die. I won't die in this engagement. No, he'll take it and go and get some jamming. Because I do think that jamming a single ship, if I'm shooting like two or three shots into it, is better than just coordinating like a focus token.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and then second question is why bring Deadeye Shot instead of a 1-point bid?
Bids are for suckers, A.
But Deadeye Shot's bad.
No.
Will, can I put that on a t-shirt? Bids are for suckers?
What?
Hey, I've said that a long time ago. I said that back in the Outrider Cup.
It's true.
Yeah, no, you don't need no bid. Though I did look at the stats, and I'm pretty sure 50 people didn't take a bid. So 50 people out of 170 or so. So a couple people are feeling it. Alright, so, actually, I would normally run Ruthless in this list. Vermeil wants to be range 1. He's got health, right? Or 0, mm-hmm. probably, with Intimidation. The Ruthless had allowed it to where everybody could, in theory, double modify 4 dice, including a modifier that was automatic. The hit to crits on the Tide Advanced, Major Vermeil's is automatic, and then Ruthless would be automatic too. So mm-hmm. it's really consistent dice. I've feared swarms, so I was like, I'm never going to use that Ruthless because I'll be too afraid of my Vermeil. I'm certainly not Ruthless in Darth Vader. Oof, get force choked for that. So I switched over to Deadeye Shot, and the real reason I'm Deadeye Shot, other than I wanted to see if it would work, is that Merrick Steel can pick crits, and Darth Vader can put through crits. So it's not that I'm trying to flip up cards, it's the fact that I would have knowledge of what that card would be. I tried to do it on stream, though, against the first game in Jace, and I was so close to doing it, because Mahler had lined up the Deadeye Shot. And I shot a ship, and I had a chance to put a panicked pilot on it. And then I could Deadeye Shot and just flip it up again, if that was the only card on the ship. Cool. Yeah, here's quadruple stress. You're welcome. So that what was the goal of it, that I could pick a bad crit, like direct hit, which is what I would choose anyways with my Merrick, and then use Deadeye Shot to try to flip that back up. I think it only worked twice in Swiss and maybe just once in the cut. But the times I did it, though, I knew that they had a direct hit on them. One Vader put in and one Merrick chose. So it did work, kind of. But I don't know.
I see your philosophy. It does make sense with Merrick for sure, and the TIE Advanced in general. Like, you're more likely to get crits, so you can see what they are and have more knowledge to get better value out of that one point Deadeye shot, which, you know, that's like an extra thing added on top of the synergy effect.
Yeah, it just kind of gives them something to do at like range 2 and 3 too, right? Because mm-hmm. like 2 attack dice, TIE Fighter, not great. But if I can barrel roll into like a, if I like know someone has a Panic Pilot and I can just barrel roll for a Bullseye and flip up that Panic Pilot again, I could also see it be really frustrating to be like Merrick puts a damage sensor ray, you can only focus, and then you move and you're like, you fix that crit, and then Mala just comes up behind you and flips it back up again. Like, I don't know. Deadeye Shot is funny, but I probably wouldn't run it again. It was kind of for the lulls, to see if it would work.
Yeah, and I would like to say, Dion, I don't think they should be screaming at you to apologize, because I don't believe any of those people believed in Vader without afterburners either.
The 5 out of 170-something lists with only 5, it was 5 out of 170-something lists had Empire at all, and there was only one Vader, and that was Will's.
What's up? Why are you guys dropping on Vader? Vader's still good. What is this nonsense?
Vader does still hit really hard. I think he's still a great piece in Empire hyperspace. You just have to know that you don't have afterburners.
That's right.
No, it is like a flight style thing. Like, no, I can't hard 3 boost and come up and sneak up on you anymore. I was trying to get him to just like one forward and one bank a lot. I think you see it in the Jace game where like I just have Vader just flying out by himself. Like, you can send half your team against me. Like, I'm totally fine with pulling half your ships away from the joust to come see what Vader is up to. But if you turn away from him, he doesn't have to do much to follow you around and arc dodge them. And that's really the big difference. Like, without the afterburners, is that I have to find those positions where I'm not K-tuning as much. I'm not just one banking, hanging out, watching you guys go towards my Reaper to go kill it.
Vader's like, I'm coming. All right, we'll continue here. Ryan, take Niels Voss.
Niels Voss running a Scum and Villainy Swarm, believe pioneered by, or at least made famous by, Octor Khan in previous GSP events, mm-hmm. running the 2 Zealous Recruit Fang Fighters, 2 Cartel M3A interceptors with Tractor Beam, and 2 Cartel Spacer M3 interceptors with Ion Cannon. Very, very efficient, very strong Scum, low initiative swarm, providing with some control elements and the punch really hard fangs that have that extra defensive Concordia Dawn at range 1.
If you've never seen this list played on stream, essentially the strategy is you have 2 flight groups. You have, you keep 1 tractor, 1 ion, and 1 fang together. You have 2 of those sets, and you basically converge on whatever it is that you want to tractor, and then usually tractor into range of everybody else. If you don't have anybody, you usually lead with the tractor one, and then you do the work with the rest of the ships from there. Very, very solid list. Congratulations to Niels for getting as far as he did, getting into the final versus Ben Doyle. Marcel, read us that last list there.
Ben Doyle. January Store Championship list. We have Fen Rao with Fearless, Boba Fett with Fearless, Maul Seismic Charges, Contraband Cybernetics, Hull Upgrade, and Slave 1 coming in at 187 points. If I'm not mistaken, this with Contraband Cybernetics as well. This with Contraband Cybernetics was probably like coming in at like 182 or 183 back in January, right?
Yep.
But even almost having all the tools still comes in at a very healthy 187. And yeah, it's a, you know, Boba Fett +1. This particular plus one is giving you the initiative for Slave One to be able to, the bid for Slave One to actually do work against almost every other list in the cut or in the game. And Fen Rao doesn't even need a bid because he's coming in at initiative six. Yeah, he's always moving last, and Fen Rao's going to hit super hard, probably die at some point. And Boba Fett will just never die and kill everything else. It was a super solid list 10 months ago, and it's a super solid list now. I wonder why it doesn't perform in extended as well as it does in hyperspace, because I honestly don't see why it shouldn't perform in extended as well. Is it just, I don't know.
I don't think that it's more I6s, but that, I guess that, Gengar and Han are already in hyperspace.
Yeah. The other part I think is that, like, I think it would be doing, it should be doing well. Fen is probably not the right call when you're expecting six Nantex with Crackshot, at least.
That's true.
And then, because we know, we all expected and we knew Bobo should do well against Nantex, which he did in the extended format. And he was already good in hyperspace. I think it was just finding the right buddy, which seemingly in the extended format was Dengar, shooting twice as good, punching really hard at I6, always being able to shoot like really powerful hits. Just Boba just needs is the biggest beat stick possible to end game. And Fen just offers him the ability to have that I6 beat stick, but also be a more AC ship that can dodge around and even end game himself at times. And obviously have a much bigger bid to guarantee both ships can be the last ships to move in their initiative bracket.
All right, so congratulations to Ben Doyle for winning the Mustafar Galactic Championship qualifier. Now, I want to close this section. We still have lists of the week, and we have a couple of questions of the week that I want to hit on. We are going into the Coruscant Invitational, the ultimate event here for the Galactic Championship, actually find out who's going to be on top. Now, we know that most people are convinced that Nantex will take it, right? Because they have won a majority of the qualifiers. And I saw a couple of interesting questions get posed over the last couple days. One of them being, you know, I have cited, and I feel that it's true. I could be completely wrong. But I've noticed there has been a reduction in the number of Nantex lists being flown in total as we've gotten closer to the Galactic Championship. But a lot of the players who qualified with that list have played in multiple, you know, to get the different pins and other prizes. And have chosen to fly other lists. So do we think, assuming that, of course, the points stay the same, and that's something we don't know, and this with the Heralds of Hope coming out and the Tie Brute coming out this upcoming week, there is a possibility that the points can change, even though we said that also for the last wave. Every time we get a new PDF, maybe they've magically scrubbed it, maybe not. Let's go assuming that they won't, okay? Assuming that there are no changes, do we think we see Nantex return in the same numbers as we did before? Yes or no? What do you think, Will?
Will they return in the same numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you talking like in the cut or in the sweats?
In the cut.
In the cut.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to put a challenge out to everybody that you could do better than Nantex. Get your own list. You can do it.
You're holding somebody by the shoulders. You can be better. You can.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan. Yes.
You don't have to. You don't have to. You can do it.
Ryan, yes or no?
Unfortunately, yes. But I'm kind of on the same thought process as Will. It's not just be better, like. It's not like taking a dominant archetype is a negative thing for you. You're a bad person. No. I think there has definitely been a lack of creativity. Mm-hmm. It's something that actually I've heard Duncan Howard say quite a bit when he's just kind of checking out some of these results and we trying to figure out what's going on, what people are doing. And there's just seemingly just people just jump into whatever's the strongest thing and just rolling with it. And granted, there is the dynamic of being creative has a much lower chance and high reward than taking what is a known quantity that is easier to obtain a high reward. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It's Coruscant. Sure, it's the final thing, but you know what? Try that thing out that you think can do it. You never know. I could have taken Ghost Fen to Worlds 2018, but I didn't. I took the Crimson Specialist Bob, and I made it. And not many other people did.
There you go. Marcel, yes or no? If there are no changes to points, will we see Nantex in the same amount as we have going back to Corellia and the first couple, Dathomir? Those were the first two events.
Mm. No, the answer is you will not see the same amount. You will see more. If there are no changes.
Opposite, going opposite.
No, I mean, and this is, I mean, it's just facts. It's like, this is the world, the not world's worlds. And this is the finale, the grand finale. The, you know, the fat lady will sing after this one is over. And everybody wants to come in to win. Like, this is the one that matters, right? Like, you might have won one of the other ones, but it ain't it. You know, you didn't win it. And Fawn, we know Fawn's gonna bring his undefeated list. Bohan is gonna bring it. More people will ring it because that's the best thing that's out there. People were playing around because they already had the cut. They already had, you know, they had various chances, but this is one and done. This is your only shot. People will bring what the best things out there, so you will see a lot of Sloan, you will see a lot of Nantex, you will see a lot of Boba Fett. You're not going to see us, and I'll even go as far as saying you'll see a few, and maybe a couple make the cut, but you're not going to see that many new ships coming out, because again, this is the one that matters. Okay. So people are going to bring what's tried and true. I know the three of us won't. We're all going to take some Garbo, but everyone else will.
Oh, I'm not in Coruscant.
Oh, well, the two of us will bring some garbage, but everyone else will bring their top game.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Again, we don't know what's going to happen. If there is a change that happens, I am curious to know, if there is a change, how much change would need to happen for it to make an impact? That's a whole nother question. We could talk about for that for hours. We're not going to do that today, but we'll find out next week to see if anything has changed. We'll see. Now, let's go on to our lists of the week. All right, taking a look at our list of the week. Our first list of the week comes to us from some RF Dexy is his name, but that's Dexter from Chicago area land. He's producer, live producer Justin from Worlds. If you guys remember Justin working on our editing, so we're gonna go ahead and pull that up. Looking, I think Ryan will. That means this one's for Marcel. Let's pull that up here. So, Justin said, I was really hoping to get some thoughts on this one. Paige Tico is a resistance list. Paige Tico with suppressive gunner, veteran turret gunner, and proximity mine. Cat in the Star Fortress with trajectory simulator, veteran turret gunner, suppressive gunner, proton bombs, seismic charges, and delayed fuses. And Tally with heroic, Deadeye Shot, and Advanced Optics. This is an extended list, and it is at 199 points. Double Star Fortresses, Marcel.
One second. Sorry, I was trying not to cough into the microphone.
No worries.
Yeah, double Star Fortresses. you know, I like the double star fortresses shooting a total. I mean, even if you only got three ships, you're shooting a total of five times potentially. But there's a couple things I do not like on it. So let's start off with a couple of things I don't like on it. So Paige Tico, great ability, good initiative, suppressive fire, yes. You know, I don't want suppressive fire to hit. I don't want suppressive fire to trigger. I want to do damage. So let's get rid of that. That means you want to miss. So let's not want to miss. Let's get rid of that. And then proximity mines, again, especially if Paige Tico's dropping them both in the same turn. Yes, that's a lot of damage, but you're bringing a bomb carrier to only drop bomb once the entire game. Nah, let's get rid of that as well. And let us go with an actual ship that we know is good. So let's go with Vinny. Let's change Paige Tico to Vinny. So Vinny basically says if you're in somebody, a friendly ship's rotating arc, you can get a focus. So Vinny wants to have Perceptive Co-Pilot on there. So let's throw Perceptive Co-Pilot on there. And then let's throw Concussion Bombs because those are a ton of fun. Let's put the Concussion Bombs on there. And Trajectory Simulator. So we can chuck them. Or we can put them behind us. We can do anything we want with those. And then, because you have Cat as your co-pilot, Cat, you know, gets an additional die when there's a device on the map. So let's throw some delayed fuses on Vinny as well. So we can have additional dice. Actually, let me see what Cat says. While the defender's at range 0-1... Okay, so he can get one extra die, but still, that way he can get an extra die either from his own bomb or from Vinny's bomb. And that way also, they're kind of helping each other out. Vinny's helping Cat get an extra die, and Cat's helping Vinny get an extra focus result on defense. Should I touch Cat or not? Yeah, let's touch Cat. Let's get rid of that suppressive gunner. We don't need suppressive gunner on Cat either.
Done.
Yeah, especially at initiative one. We don't really care about depleting them at initiative one. What we do want to do with that is we want to get rid of Tally and upgrade it to the actual ship that we want to have on there, which is ZZ.
Boom.
So put ZZ, throw a heroic and advanced optics. Dead eye shot. No, we don't need dead eye shot. Get rid of that. Actually, what you're missing is a delayed fuse on Vinny. Vinny's supposed to have.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, no issue. So you're coming in at 199. So it's Vinny with Perceptive Co-Pilot, Trajectory Simulator, Concussion Bombs, Veteran Turret Gunner, and Delayed Fuses. Cat with Trajectory Simulator, Veteran Turret Gunner, Proton Bombs, Seismic Charges, Delayed Fuses. And ZZ with advanced. Actually, let's do one thing different here. Let's put the seismic charges on Vinny, and let's move the concussion bombs to Cat, because Cat can then preserve the seismic charges from Cat to Vinny and the other way around. Because this gives Cat the ability to hold that concussion bomb one turn longer by throwing a proton instead.
Got it. So does that look right? You want to go ahead and read it down one more time? Make sure I got it right.
Sure. You got Vinny with Trajectory, Perceptive Co-Pilot, Seismic Charges, Delayed Fuse, Veteran Turret Gunner. You have Cat with Concussion Bombs, Proton Bombs, Veteran Turret Gunner, Delayed Fuse, and Trajectory Simulator. And then you got ZZ with Heroic and Advanced Optics. And there you go.
All right. Fantastic. And first time caller in the chat had a great idea. I've never thought to do this. I'm going to make, after today's episode, I'm going to make a Discord channel where we are going to post the old and the new updated lists of the weeks so that you guys can reference them. So I'm going to go ahead and make sure I make a copy of the new one and put it in our notes so that I have a copy of the new one. That way you guys can try them out for yourself. All right. So there won't be up right away. It'll be, I gotta get set up on Discord. But by the time you're listening to this in the future, if you're a future watching person or listening person, it should be on the Discord. Exclamation point Discord, or click the link in the description down below. All right. Let's go on here to good idea. Thank you, Will. Let's go on to the next one. This one, Ryan's going to be taking a look at, and it comes from Lou the Lunatic. Guy's a crazy person. All right, said, I love this list, and I think it's a great archetype. Beefy droid swarm. What improvements would you guys make? And is there a better option than the hyenas I got? So we're starting off here with two HMP gunships, the Geonosian prototypes with sync laser cannon and the repulsor stabilizer. Two Techno Union bombers. One of them has concussion bombs, Dark One probe droids, and landing struts. The other one also has concussion bomb, landing struts, but now has proximity mines. And then a Bactoid prototype. That's the Initiative 1 hyena, the double dotted, with fire control system, Diamond Boron missile, and landing struts, sitting at 200 points.
All right, so I think there's a solid base here. I haven't had a chance to try the Geonosian prototypes with synced laser cannon yet. I've kind of stuck with one of them with tractor beams, but I can definitely see how that upgrade and that chassis has some good potential. I think what I want to start with is that Bactoid prototype. I'm not sure if that is necessary, and by that I mean, what I like potentially with that is Diamond Boron missiles are one of his only tech that he has for dealing with swarms, because this, he calls this a tank, a beefy droid swarm. This is only five ships, and the beefy ships really are just HMPs. Hyenas still are just five health on two agility. Like, that is still just a V19 torrent. So I think I want to up the beef a little bit, which, while maybe at the cost of the Diamond Boron missiles, once I finish out this build here, I think it might be a better well-rounded list. So we're just going to X out that Bactoid prototype completely. And we're going to take proximity mines out for now, because that just feels like a fill and add-on at this point. And we're going to change it to a third HMP. It's going to be a Bactoid drone with repulsor lift stabilizers. And if I looked at this list correctly, this was extended.
Yep.
So we have access to one of my favorite missiles on the HMPs, which is the energy shell charges. I like it a lot on HMPs because they're designed to have locks on many different ships and help each other reroll stuff, which in my games I've played, it's super FCS. It's really good. And obviously almost a requirement to bring Dark One probe droids in the list, which Lou already has. When you have that, that also means with energy shell charges and with the chassis having as much health as it does, it can hold on to that calculate to shoot that missile off and choose whatever target they want to shoot at. And likely because there are five ships, all with varying amounts of target locks, that energy shell charge can be very potent and very flexible. And I'm inclined to leave that list as is, which is the one point. My only thought is, while it would make the Bactoid drone the most expensive, I do like putting probe droids on HMPs, because you can start by, there are more maneuvers you can send out your ship further and then curve them back in with the repulsor lift stabilizers. I've had a lot of good openings that I've worked on that it can go further and then curl itself back in.
So you want to swap the Dark One probe droids to the Bactoid?
You can. I could see why putting that amount of points on that single HMP and I-1 is kind of eh, but you're only 3 points more than the other Geonosian prototypes, who are also very flexible in the firepower. And overall, that's what I like. So the hyenas, sure, they need the target locks for the concussion missiles to shoot at that target. But the energy shell charges and both the sync laser cannons are very flexible firepower. And I personally like having a Dark One probe droid on an HMP. So that's what I would adjust.
Okay. There you go. All right, read it down.
So we have the Geonosian prototype with synced laser cannon, repulsive stabilizers, a second one of those, a techno or two techno union bombers, both with landing struts and concussion missiles, and then the HMP backdive prototype with energy shell charges, Dark One probe droids, and repulsor lift stabilizers.
Fantastic. And last but not least, we have the terrible Acorn 13. Will's going to take a look at your Galactic Republic list. Look, Will doesn't have to adjust a vendor list this week.
I liked ripping those vendors out, though.
So we start off here with Ahsoka Tano with Battle Meditation, R4P17, and Calibrated Laser Targeting. And Squad 7 Veterans. Those are the Initiative 3 ARC-170s with Marksmanship and R3 Astromech. I'm going to go ahead and read the prompt here. It says, hey, I'm new to the game, only been playing for about 4 months, and found GSP a couple of months ago. Great show. By the way, I quickly threw this together for a game, but I like it. Ahsoka is there for support for the first few turns, allowing the ARCs to double mod and then be a sneaky Jedi after that. The ARCs are there to joust and make a shield for Ahsoka. How would you guys improve this? Oh, and just to note, the two-point bid isn't there because Battle Meditation on Ahsoka should be 6, not 4. Okay, so it looks like there might be a...
I think it is 4 points. I looked into it. I believe that is correct, actually.
Because
she's only Initiative 3.
She's initiative 3. Costed. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
Right? 0, 1, 2,
No, I believe it's correct. I trust
3.
In the Yasby.
Yeah, because she's initiative
3. All hail Lee Asby.
Yep, yeah, it's 198. So, terrible Acorn, first, you got 2 bonus points. Look at you. You're already ahead. Will, do the magic.
All right, so, I don't understand. The marksmanship, we're going to get rid of that. Don't need it. These arcs probably won't get bullseye. I'm also going to drop... I got a plan. I'm going to drop the R3 Astromechs off of those arcs as well. And we're going to swap them for Synchronized Console, providing a similar but different effect.
Okay.
I do like the R3s with Ahsoka moving and the coordinating to get a bunch of locks or whatever. But... Synchronized Console going to be our affordable price here, because I got someone pretty big coming in here, so we got to clean up some points for him, which includes that R4P17 droid, which I do love, by the way, because it's soaking user force, so you K-turn, focus lock. Oof, that is good. I'm sad to see it go, but I got something else planned. That was a pun earlier about someone big coming in. We're going to put Yoda on one of those arcs.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So this is I've been saying for a while, and I didn't know where to put it. I didn't know what list it was going to come into, but I did say that Yoda, because he works with, purple maneuvers or purple actions, there's very few purple actions outside of the force carrying crew, except for currently battle meditation. So normally Ahsoka has to either not take an action, a regular action, to use her force to battle meditate. Okay. And then she's sitting on her extra one. Or if you want a focus token, you have to do Ahsoka, the battle meditation. So you end up using both of your force points. With Yoda around, the Grand Master, Ahsoka can take her perform action step as normal. And I guess technically before that, she would can use her Ahsoka ability to spend a force point to trigger battle meditation. But Yoda can give her that force point back then. So you're spreading that 2 force resource of Ahsoka's ability and battle meditation amongst the two ships then. Plus, it kind of gives you Yoda as well has a purple coordinate. So if things get rough, and that 7th Fleet, or they're not 7th Fleet, they're Squad 7 veterans here at the I-3 can maybe help out some other arcs. It has 2 force points, so if Ahsoka goes down, like that's your top dog out there trying to double modify. But what this allows the archetype to do is trigger that battle meditation every round without sacrificing Ahsoka's perform action step, which will probably just be focus, I assume. Maybe a reposition or so. But yeah, I really don't. I'll ask this question to you guys. Is there a Yoda list right now? Like, until we get those purple maneuvers, like, Yoda really seems underrated.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we have not found yet is the best place for Yoda. I don't know if his final form isn't here yet. There, at least there's nothing obvious yet, which is just, right. It's just going to take experimentation until we find it.
No, I think this has potential because, like I said, splitting that force economy up between the two Jedis, then so you can because like the Yoda one doesn't really need coordinating, mm-hmm. Right? Like he's just flying around focusing. Maybe he gets locked from sync consoled, but Ahsoka can then just help out the other two who are probably leading the charge. Keep your Yoda back a little bit. Don't be leading the charge with him. He's worth 60 points. So. It might work out. I think it's going to be cleaner, though, because, like I said, you have less decisions on Ahsoka. The Jedis can just battle meditate. I would like to see Yoda on the board.
All right, let's go ahead and read it down in its final form.
All right, we have Ahsoka Tano, battle meditation, calibrated laser targeting. We have 3 Squad 7 veterans, 1 with Yoda, and all of them with synchronized consoled for a full 200 points.
Fantastic. And again, we're going to be putting the lists of the week and their updated versions in a new channel on our Discord. So if you're a part of that, you'll be able to see that here. I'm going to say in the coming days, it should be honestly up tonight before I go to bed. So look forward to that. I'm not sure exactly where I'll put it, but we'll make it super obvious where it goes, or at least I'll try. So those are our list of the week. Remember, you can always submit in our submission section under list of the week. Make sure you gotta use a YASB link though. Okay, YASB, it is a must. Nothing else. YASB link. Don't just give me text. I need a YASB link if you're going to be submitting it. I literally just scroll by if there's no YASB link. Ignored. Okay. All right, I want to end today with a couple of quick-fire questions of the week. Now, we could get into long debates here, but we're going to try to see if we can get it off quick. First question. If you could remove one type of sandwich from the lunch field entirely, like it straight up never existed and was removed from everybody's memory, what would it be? And why? This comes from Battlebrow. I'm gonna go first. Corned beef sandwiches are some of the nastiest things I've ever seen in my life. I'm out. Corned beef disappeared. Gone. Wrecked. Marcel.
Oh, there's so many bad ones. I would say the worst sandwich, get rid of. Hate salami, but let's not do salami. There is, God, come back to me.
All right.
I have mine.
All right, Will's ready.
I'm ready. BLT.
What?
Get out of here. No,
I'm just coming from the guy who flew Vader in hyperspace. That's all I got to say.
I have no idea how that equates, but I agree, Marcel. What is this?
Get white. It's probably, you know, it's just like the cheapest white bread toasted. Iceberg lettuce, probably wilted.
Where are you getting it from? Like,
this is what I'm saying. This is just how I imagine these BLTs all the time. Bacon, not cooked. cooked in the a saucepan or something, not in the oven. Just, man, there's so many other meats and vegetables and fruits you could be putting on your sandwiches. They should not be BLT.
I don't know what to say. I'm broken. I can't comprehend this. Ryan, go.
I've never enjoyed Reubens.
Fair.
Not a fan of Reubens. Oh, see, now Will can't handle it.
What's with you guys and corned beef? You're like, delicious spiced cow?
No, so there's some
get out of here.
There's some corned beef that's okay. I just never enjoy the Reuben. It's the combination of what's on it, the sauce or whatever that's used. I've tried it. I like a lot of sandwiches. Can't enjoy a Reuben.
All righty.
I'm going to jump on the Reuben hate. I'm not a fan of corned beef. Corned beef, especially on sandwiches, is just salt on top of salt, and it's just ham with like a million pounds of salt. Can't like it.
All right. Well, turns out most of Gold Squadron not a fan of corned beef. And you know what? Maybe one of you can convince me that it's good. But the only corned beef I've had experience with is what my mother served me when I was a child, and I hated it. Okay? Love you, Mom. I hated it. Anytime she'd make it, I just wouldn't eat. Just be like, she's like, this is what we got. I'm like, well, I guess I'm not eating today, in a more respectful way than that. But you know what I mean. Okay? We just move on. Alrighty. So the sandwich wars have begun. Apparently, Will has a vendetta against BLTs. I feel like, Will, I need to make you a Dion Morales special BLT to make you fall in love with the BLT.
Is it going to have like some sauce on it? Maybe some flavor?
It's going to be great.
We might not agree on the worst, but I think we probably, at least two of us, will agree on the best. Maybe more. And it involves peanut butter.
And jelly, baby. Let's go.
There you go.
You can't be so much better than that. Come on.
No. At home.
Have you gone to a good deli shop and ordered a sandwich for once?
I've had a million of them, but there's nothing better than just like, hey, you know what? It's 2 a.m. or it's noon or it's 7 p.m. Don't matter what time of the day. I'm at home. I'm in my jammies. I'm like, what's in the cupboard? We have some Wonder Bread and we have some PB&J.
I will say,
PB&J but man, that being your favorite, you know, you're just going to have that layer of peanut butter stuck to the roof of your mouth for like 30 minutes.
And that's even good. That means we ain't got to talk for the next 30 minutes. You're just sitting there like trying to, you know, get it out. Yeah.
All right.
Are you guys going crunchy grape? What's your preference there?
So
not crunchy grapes, crunchy peanut butter. Grape
crunchy grapes, yes.
Don't be confused.
No, smooth and grape jelly, for sure. Now I will occasionally buy, like, when I have like the desire for crunchy peanut butter, I will do it, but you have to toast the bread. If you don't toast the bread with crunchy peanut butter, what are you doing? You're being a dummy. You're just tearing up your bread. You're using sandpaper.
Yeah, the bread has holes in it, and then it looks more like a Swiss cheese. Then, yeah.
So.
You see, he knows. He knows.
So, hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode of Gold Squadron Podcast. I did see a couple people asking about the sign-up for this weekend's Flight Club. Go to the Discord. I'm going to be posting it. I still have a bunch of stuff I got to get done tonight, and that is one of them. We're going to have open up that that Flight Club time to teach some people how to use Tabletop Simulator. I got you, fam. I'm going to get it worked on right now. I love you. Be safe. Be smart. And we will see you next week. We'll be talking about Heralds of Hope and the Type Root, most likely, and any other surprises that may come. Thanks for watching, everybody. Gold Squadron out.